Tonight, mermaids and other strange creatures. That's right. Varla Ventura with us. We'll be back with her in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Varla Ventura back with us. Now, noted author, of course, of several of her books, Natural Causes of Lycanthropy, The Malevolent Banshee, The Vampire. We'll talk about those other creatures later on. Her new work, Among the Mermaids, Facts, Myths, and Enchantments from the Sirens of the Sea. Varla, of course, was introduced to the strange and unusual at a very young age. Her first game was, guess what, the Ouija board. Yep, and family picnics and cemeteries were common outings. What kind of a family would do that? She spent most of her formative years exploring graveyards, underground tunnels, and here she is back on Coast to Coast. How are you, Varla?
Hello, George. Thank you so much for having me.
And you also wrote the trivia book, The Book of the Bizarre.
I did. I wrote The Book of the Bizarre and Beyond Bizarre, and I think that The Book of the Bizarre is when you and I first met over
That's
the airwaves.
Right.
Well, many years ago.
So your family takes you to cemeteries for picnics?
Yeah. When I was a kid, it was very... In San Francisco, most of the cemeteries have been moved to a town called Colma. They were moved in the 30s. It sounds strange, but it's true.
Yeah.
And so Colma is sort of just like the city of the dead. And believe it or not, we just used to go there. There's cemetery upon cemetery, and they're like massive parks. And my mom used to just take us there and let us run around and eat salami sandwiches and just be around the statues. So it was really normal for me.
I ask you this every time I chat with you, but any relation to Jesse Ventura?
No, unfortunately, but if he's listening, I'd love to talk to him. I'm a big fan.
You're two different people, let me tell you. You're a little more approachable.
Oh, well, thank you.
Anyways, tell me about Among the Mermaids. You know, I think it was the Discovery Channel has done a documentary on mermaids, and I've gotten so many emails about these creatures. Tell me what led you into writing Among the Mermaids.
When I was a kid, there was a period of time that we actually lived kind of like gypsies. We were in transition from place to place, and we sort of set up camp next to this river up in the foothills. And it was right around that time, late at night, my mom would read us stories from the Hans Christian Andersen and Grimm's fairy tales. And since we were right next to water, the one that kind of always stood out in my mind was the real story of the Little Mermaid in the Hans Christian Andersen book. And in particular, the idea that when she tried to walk on land, like the sacrifice that she was making to be on land, was that every step was like daggers stabbing into her feet. And I never forgot that. That image always stayed in my mind. So I started researching a variety of old folklore, and mm-hmm. this is something I've been interested in. And mermaid stories just were very frequent and very interesting. There were a lot of connections between the different authors who were writing about mermaids around kind of the turn of the century in the late 1800s and early 1900s. A lot of, Irish myths, which I've always been very interested in,
yeah.
And so mermaids.
How far back do some of these mermaid myths go?
I think that actually one of the earliest myths goes back to about 1000 BC that I found, at least certainly in a written record, and that was a story of an Assyrian goddess named Atargatis, which I may be butchering the name, and I hope she'll forgive me.
I think she will. She may call the show. You never know.
You never know. It's coast to coast. It could happen. She killed a mortal man that she loved by accident, and she tried to hide herself in a lake and couldn't completely conceal herself, and so she turned herself into a creature that was sort of half fish. And I think that's part of where the legend, you know, where the idea that mermaids often lure mortals,
mm-hmm.
usually men, into the water and, of course, drown them because
Now, was it around the 1700s, 1800s that these stories of mermaids really started to crop up?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the written record, William Butler Yeats was very instrumental in documenting a lot of the Irish folklore and mythology. He wrote several books, one called Folklore, called Tales of Irish Peasantry, I think, and that was written in like 1895. And he was documenting some of the old stories that, of course, had been told for centuries just in the oral tradition. And that was one of the books that I read that I found quite a bit of information and clues that led me to other authors. And so I think, like, with that, he was sort of part of that revival, the similar thing that the Brothers Grimm were doing throughout Germany. He was kind of gathering stories and documenting folklore, sort of an anthropologist in that way. And that was wildly popular. And so I would say, like, probably the late 1800s was, you know, the Victorian era seemed to lend itself to a lot of the exploration of mythology.
Did the people of that era actually believe in mermaids?
Oh, yes. I think that Yeats probably did. And I believe that, you know, many of the stories that were told in complete sincerity. And unfortunately, in some of the literature, you find sort of there's sort of a little bit of a snobbery between the sort of, you know, the literate class that were documenting these things, mm-hmm. and the peasants that were, you know, the so-called peasants that were telling the stories. But I think that, you know, that's usually where the truth comes from anyway. It's the people who know the truth. It's not always the you know, scholars. We're just documenting what's out there. But, you know, it's like all of your callers. They know what's really going on, you know, all of your listeners.
What did people normally report, Varla, when they saw mermaids? What did they say?
Most often it's a beautiful creature, usually at just a distance. You think that it's a woman in the waves. Hair that's very long and sort of tangles into the kelp. Kind of really like what we think of as a mermaid, a beautiful woman with, you know, sort of a concealed tail underwater. So much classical art is dedicated to that imagery. And I think that those two things, you know, marry very well, the written record and the oral tradition and the art. It's pretty consistent, although in Ireland there are some pretty scary renditions of what creatures were lurking beneath, and in a few other cultures as well, where there would be, you know, like were-dolphins and creatures that maybe looked okay from a distance, and when you got up close, they, like a vampire, would bare their fangs. And,
well, I was going to say, are mermaids considered friendly or evil?
I guess that depends on who you ask. I think that they are enchanting, and so in that way, you know, they seem friendly. They certainly want to appear friendly, because you're not going to just approach them if they're, you know, if they're rude. they're trying to lure you in. Most of the accounts, it's usually the mermaid sort of pretends to not be seen. She sits and she sings and she combs her hair and she pretends that the mortals aren't actually seeing her. I'm sorry?
Are there male mermaids?
Oh, yes, of course. The Murrow, the merfolk, that's sort of the greater term. There's a lot of accounts, and Yeats had quite a few accounts of of mermen. I just think that they're not as appealing. I don't think they have quite the romantic element to them that the mermaidens do. So they aren't as popular, but there are just as many mermen, and usually there's a couple of stories that I read where the mermaid's whole challenge was to trap a mortal man. So, and she said that if she didn't get help getting back into the sea, her husband would eat her children. There was this idea that there was this sort of fierce and terrible king kind of lurking beneath.
Did these mermaids have gills?
I mean, there's a few different versions of them, but mostly they just seem to be able to kind of look. Maybe the gills are pretty concealed. I mean, it's hard to really tell because they look so human from the waist up, and that's, you know, most of what you see.
But from the waist down, they don't look human.
No, they do not.
As a matter of fact, there are some people buying fins, and they go swimming in these things. I think you and I talked about that last time you were on.
Oh, I have actually in the very back of my book, I have some a shopping guide where, and there are several websites and custom fin makers that you can actually get a silicone
set of
fin
fins
made,
yeah,
so that you can swim in it. In fact, today in the news, I read a story about a woman in Florida who was kicked out of two different public swimming pools.
She brought her fins.
For wearing her fin, yeah.
I guess they think it's not safe that she was going to drown or something. I don't know.
I mean, they think they just said we have a no fin
yeah,
policy.
Really. They just wrote it into the books or something.
Yeah.
Well,
I would think that would be an attraction.
Tell me a little bit more about the mermaids. I mean, did anybody ever catch one?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, fishermen's tales of encounters. There are a lot of sort of seemingly accidental encounters. Maybe they've been tangled up in the line of in a fisherman's net. I think that there have been a few survivors of the sort of mermaid encounters, and one of the more famous stories is the T. Crofton Croker story of the Soul Cages, where the famous character Jack kind of visits, you know, he goes and he visits the sort of the marrow under the sea, and they have these lobster pots where they capture the souls of drowning sailors. But he, I forget how he does it, but he gets out of it somehow and gets back onto land and lives to tell the tale. So there certainly was, you know, there was the whole P.T. Barnum sideshow mermaid, the Fiji mermaid, where he had actually kind of crafted this creature that he put on display and then, charged a nickel for people to see the real mermaid. And I think it was like part monkey and like part paper mache. But there's very few actual, it's akin to, you know, something like Sasquatch in how elusive they actually are.
The mermaids, do you think that they are real?
I do. I think they're real. I think they exist. I think there's just as much chance that they exist as the Jersey Devil or the Yeti. There's probably more evidence
Mothman
for creatures like ghosts, and there's more common encounters, but ghosts are something that can kind of exist in our everyday space. Mermaids exist only in the sea or in large bodies of water. But I think that, you know, anytime you have repeated stories from cross-culturally, kind of with a lot of similarities that go back way beyond the written tradition, back into the oral tradition, there's always, at the very end, and you can spend thousands of dollars and many, many years exploring to prove what was sort of there all along, if you're just willing to kind of suspend your doubts for a minute and look at the truth within the myth.
Do they speak or make sounds?
Well, they have beautiful voices, and that is one of the ways that they sort of lure you in, is that you hear this sort of enchanting enchanting song. It's that sort of siren song. But I think if you've ever gone swimming in the ocean or spent any time scuba diving or snorkeling, it's very, very easy to get disoriented in the water.
Oh, sure.
The waves kind of lap against you, and there's this soothing sound, and you're looking at, you know, kelp beds, and everything just kind of is moving, and then you sort of look up and you realize that you're much further from shore than you had thought you were. And I think that mermaids can kind of, you know, enter the mermaids, swoop in, you can play up that that disorientation, that kind of the confusion. Certainly there were many, many sightings after long, long hours at sea where, you know, scurvy and other dehydration probably came into play for many of the accounts. But that doesn't exactly discount that they're there.
When you were doing the research for the book, Among the Mermaids, come across any interesting facts or tidbits?
Yeah, well, I certainly did. I found some of the most interesting things were, well, one of the things that I thought was the most interesting was this Irish tradition, traditional belief that mermaids actually, in order to go into the sea, they just could walk around like regular humans, but then they put these sort of cloaks on, and these cloaks allowed them to go and breathe underwater. And that's actually very similar to sort of the idea of a selkie, which is, rather than being half fish and half human, a selkie is a seal that can become human on dry land if, you know, if they play their cards right, they, you know, trap a mortal into marrying them, they can live on land.
Interesting. how long do these mermaids stay underwater?
Well, I think mermaids are like, you know, I think it's more about how long can they stay out of water. I actually was thinking about this today and thinking, you know, because there are actually several real mermaids, real life mermaids. There are some like the Moken people who can hold their breath for up to 10 minutes underwater to do diving and still do that today. There's a whole...
that is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a tradition of these Japanese fisher women that can, they pass it on from generation to generation. It's always the women, and they do, they dive, you know, 20, 30 feet down, and sort of like you might dive for abalone, but without any equipment. They just dive down and they hold their breath and they can train themselves. So you certainly can train yourself to stay underwater longer.
Some people say that what people are really seeing are seals or mantis or some other kind.
Yeah, well, manatees for sure. I mean, if you think about, you know, some of the early art of, you know, mermaid sightings, and you look at a manatee's tail, there's a great similarity between the shape of that. And like I said, you know, you've got scurvy and you've got many, many nights away from your beloved, and pretty soon you're starting to think, like, that thing out there might be a mermaid. We should go that way. But, I think there's lots of ways to explain what could be real and what couldn't be real. But I think ultimately, again, if you look at the consistency in the mythology from different places, it's hard to just dismiss that. I find it hard to dismiss because I find that when you do, you're often, you know, a few years later.
I want to get your favorite story, Varla, when we come right back. Talking about mermaids with Varla Ventura. Next hour, we'll talk about some of her other works as well, The Banshees, The Vampire as well, on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, have you had a chance yet to watch our television show, Beyond Belief? You can. It's available to you. Just go to our website, click hosts at the top, and then the TV icon opens up, and you will see some wonderful guests, and watch the show and send us some feedback, if you would. And if you're in the greater Denver area, if you want to be in the audience, just keep your eyes out at coasttocoastam.com. We'll have various links for you to fill out a form, and you can come on by and be a part of the studio audience there. We will be back in a moment with Varla Ventura on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Varla Ventura with us. Varla, favorite mermaid story. What do you think?
My favorite mermaid story, I think, is this one that's called The Mermaid of Druid Lake. And it was written in 1902 by a man. I love his name. His name was Charles Weathers Bump. It's really a humorous story. And basically the gist is they spot this mermaid, and this guy spots a mermaid in a lake in Central Park. And she laments not being able to ever leave this small lake. So he and his friend fashion a sort of tank on the back of an old jalopy, you know, and this is circa, you know, 1900.
Right.
And take her out for a joyride. And it's funny, and it's very descriptive, and it's not as well known as some of the other mermaid tales. So I found it to be, I included it in the book just for that reason.
Did she enjoy herself on her trip?
She did. And then I guess I'll give it away a little bit, but they actually end up crashing, and then she sort of slithers away and disappears. And the whole thing is it's funny, but it's
got kind of a surreal ending, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just sort of, you know, I'm sure the author was musing along, walking through the park one day, and imagined what would happen if I saw a mermaid here. And it was very well described, and it's a lovely little story.
Are we still getting mermaid reports from people out at sea?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. In fact, probably my favorite chapter in the book, The Mermaid of Druid Lake aside, is the sort of more firsthand accounts. And while I was writing the book, I sort of put a call out on my website, which I like to do to ask people to kind of tell me their stories. And I actually got a couple. I know there's more out there, but I think that people are a little more nervous about sharing their mermaid encounters than maybe, like, I think a ghost encounter is probably a little more accepted. And even among in the paranormal community, I think that there's a lot of disbelief and mocking towards someone who might say that they saw a mermaid. But nonetheless, I had one woman who came forward and said that she and her mother were down in the Bahamas, and they saw a merman in their room. And they sort of individually saw this creature with glowing eyes. She even sent me a drawing of what it looked like. That's included in the book. And then some two sisters who are Australian Aboriginals sent their story of their sort of like the what they call the mermaid dreaming story of how their people came to be from the mermaids. So that was really beautiful. And then, of course, once you kind of put it out there, I've heard a couple of stories recently about a good friend of mine who kind of grew up at sea, living on boats with her mother, and her mother having this really disorienting experience one night, hearing this sort of mermaid song out in the fog. And another person told me recently about a sort of an underwater UFO light that they saw.
Those are great stories.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot. I think there's probably more out there, and hopefully, you know, when people listen to a show like this, they'll call in with their experience. But I think it's, you know, like ghosts, you see things out of the corner of your eyes, and you know, you're not sure what it was, so you kind of dismiss it until someone else tells a story very similar.
Varla, are there any cultures that are more prevalent with the mermaid stories and sightings than another?
Yes, definitely. Well, island cultures in general. So, you know, any of the island nations, most of, I would say the majority of what I found was the British Isles, definitely in Ireland. There's a lot of mythology about Murrow, Selkies, other sort of strange creatures and ghost-like creatures that wash up on the shore at night. And I would say that that's probably the most common.
I love this poem in your book by Yeats. And it goes, a mermaid found a swimming lad, picked him for her own, pressed her body to his body, laughed, and plunging down, forgot in cruel happiness that even lovers drown. She didn't realize he was a human, did she?
Well, I think that, yeah, in some ways, you know, the mermaids, they have a certain level of, it's not quite innocence, but it's almost as if they don't realize that, you know, it's like a kid who holds a kitten too tight. They don't realize that it's actually going to hurt the person that they're drawing in until it's, you know, it's too late.
Are they technologically advanced? Any reports that they build things? I mean, because they do have hands.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of connection and certainly a lot of speculation about, of course, Atlantis and merfolk coming from, you know, being the population of Atlantis and Lemuria. And then I was talking with someone from one of the hosts of 30 Odd Minutes, and he was saying that he's done a lot of research into underwater crafts and
submersible UFOs.
Mm-hmm. And I know that that's a topic that's come up on Coast to Coast before, and that's certainly, you know, rather than this idea that Atlantis, like, came and went and was lost, that it was actually there all along, and that the mer people, you know, they conceal it because it's a very common theme in fairy lore in Ireland, is that you only see it if you are able or ready. It sees you, but you don't always see it, and that certain things have to be in place for you to be able to kind of cross into that world, and, you know, the veil being thin and all of that kind of idea.
Varla, has it ever been reported that a mermaid was captured and held somewhere?
I think there's
like a circus or something like that.
Well, I mean, there certainly has been a couple. There have been a few sideshow kind of antics like that, and the P.T. Barnum Fiji mermaid, which really just looked like this sort of carcass. And I think there were a couple of other things sort of around that era of, especially in the United States, of early sideshow collecting. But never that it was actually a real mermaid. And certainly there were a lot of, you know, mermaid performers and, you know, the girl in the fish tank kind of thing and remember too, this is a time before television, before everyone had books in their house. So seeing something like that, it was a lot easier to believe that that was a real creature.
When you were writing Among the Mermaids, was there any specific topic that just got to you more than the other ones?
I think that, you know, one thing that just sort of came to my mind repeatedly was just the idea that we've kind of sort of fantasized and romanticized what a mermaid is, and I'm as guilty as the next person. I mean, there's a certain just like beauty and lore that's really appealing, but there is sort of a more dark and menacing underbelly, and that I noticed as a current throughout much of the folklore that I read. So I think that probably really stood out to me, that I didn't go into it expecting them to be quite as dark as they really are, although I was hopeful.
And explain that. How, when you say dark, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, I honestly, like, and I love the movie, but The Little Mermaid, you know, the Disney version, it sort of puts this idea in your head that, you know, there's a calypso beat to the mermaids, to what the mermaids are all
about. And Splash. Remember Splash with Daryl Hannah?
Now, Splash. Okay, so I did love that movie. But what I loved more was the movie that was based on, which is Mr. Peabody and the Mermaid. And I don't know if you ever saw that, but that's from the
'40s.
And it's this fantastic plot because it's William Powell, who is famous for playing a drunkard. And he goes out on a honeymoon and he captures a mermaid and hides it from his new bride in a pool back at his house, back at his mansion. And she just thinks he's drunk all the time. So she doesn't believe him. And that's actually, even though it's a comedy, that's another really common theme.
And I assume he falls in love with the mermaid, right?
He falls in love with the mermaid and she teases him and he's trying to hide it from his wife, and they do all the, actually the scenes that they do with the mermaid underwater were filmed in at the Weeki Wachee, I think that's what it's called, in Florida, the famous kind of mermaid springs down there.
Well, in the 40s, that's pretty good then, if they could do that kind of film.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful movie.
But I got to know Daryl Hannah at some Health Freedom Expos I go to. She's a wonderful person, by the way, and she's an activist all the way, but that movie plateaued her. It put her right on the map, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. She was wonderful in it, and she sort of captured that sort of, vivacious, kind of funny mermaid character that, you could imagine if you had finally got the mermaid out of water.
Well, as bizarre as it sounds, though, it's possible that creatures like that exist on this planet.
Oh, absolutely. It is definitely possible. I think it's more than possible. It's, I think they do exist. And I think that, the sea is very vast, and there are parts of the bottom of the ocean that we'll never reach. And who knows? I mean, every day we're discovering some sort of creature that's lurking in there. But I think mermaids are probably, if they've seen it all, what's been happening to the sea and that sort of giant, like, country of plastic that's off the Pacific coast, if they've seen any of that, they're in hiding. So,
do you think they're more fish-like instead of human-like?
I think they're 50-50. In my mind, they're 50-50. Maybe underwater, they don't look quite as alluring, I mean, they have a lot in common with shapeshifters, where they can appear to be one thing. And there's a couple of kind of more scary tales where, they appears to be this beautiful woman, and then you get closer,
and
suddenly
it's
this sort of hideous beast. Not quite what you bargained for.
Well, in some of the pictures I've seen, they're pretty hideous looking, aren't they?
Yeah, but you got to take that with a grain of salt, because look at some of the pictures of witches. You see a lot of haggy looking witches, and I think that's a way to sort of dismiss their power or something by saying, oh well, they look like this.
Name of the book: Among the Mermaids, Facts, Myths, and Enchantments from the Sirens of the Sea, by Varla Ventura. This is just one of her many books. We'll be talking about some of her other works and just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. The people who have witnessed these mermaid sightings, and like you said, they're a little reluctant to do it, but all walks of life of these people?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. People from around the world, from different, different countries and different attitudes. Not necessarily believers in the paranormal, but they saw what they saw, and it's one of those things that you really are never going to know about someone unless you ask them. It's very few people who will volunteer that information until they find out you wrote a book about it and you're actually interested, or they hear you just ask them. But I think there's also, there's this other kind of culture of mermaids, of these sort of, you'd mentioned Daryl Hannah being an activist, and there are all these wonderful mermaid and mermen activists who don their tails, and they, perform, and they make videos, and they crusade to protect the ocean.
Yeah. They do. There could be many out there. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, and when we talk about that, there could be many of them. Has anybody ever found a carcass?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if there's ever been somebody who's found a real, true mermaid carcass. There certainly have been, you know, there's a few tales of that, but I think it's pretty hard for them to actually be captured and you know, actually die in that way. Now, Selkies, on the other hand, there are a lot of accounts of Selkies being captured, Selkies being the sort of seal-like creatures. And what they can do is they're a seal in the sea, and then when they get up on dry land, they can actually take off their seal coat and become mortal. And if they, you know, enchant a mortal man, he'll bury their, and she buries her coat, and then if he ever finds it, she has to go back into the sea. That's sort of like the recurring story. And there's been a lot of, there are a lot more accounts of those creatures getting tangled up and having, you know, getting tangled up in fishing lines and nets and things like that.
Marla, what is, with some of these other creatures you've looked at, what are changelings?
Ooh, changelings are, they're among the kind of creepier beings. A changeling is basically a baby that's been switched with a baby from the fairy kingdom. So you might wake up one morning and go to check on, you know, your little one in the crib, and you may or may not notice right away, usually you notice, that there's something different. And that's because, for whatever reason, someone from the fairy kingdom, a creature from the fairy kingdom, has come and switched out the baby and left you with a changeling.
Jeez. That's a horrible thought, isn't it?
It's a pretty horrible thought. It now that I have a little one myself, it definitely, it's kind of one of the scarier ones, because it's like, oh, you know, you would notice as a mom, as a mother, you know, you would notice right away. But I have my theories. There are a few famous stars, for example, that I'm pretty convinced are changelings. Tom York, the lead singer of Radiohead, his voice has this sort of fairy-like quality, and his demeanor and his whole being kind of seems as if there's something about him that doesn't quite fit in with this world, and it's as if he were a baby from the fairy kingdom, a changeling that was raised in the land of the mortal.
Would he know what he was?
I don't think so. I think it's like knowing whether or not you're adopted. You probably wouldn't know unless someone told you at some point.
All right, stay with us, Varla. We're going to come back and talk about some of your other works, of course, The Vampire, The Banshees as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Don't touch your dial. We'll be right back.